ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय असमृतार्थम् आख्यानम् अत्यद्भुता योगा निष्ठम् आख्याय अनन्ताचरितोपननम् परीक्षितम् भगवता विरामम् तं नः परं पुण्य असमृत्वार्थम् आख्यानम् आख्याद्भुतयोगनिष्ठम् अज्ञाह्यनन्थाचरितोपपन्नम् परीक्षितम् भागवताभिरामम् तन्नः परम् पुण्य असमृतार्थम् आख्यानमद्यद्भुतयोगनिष्ठम् आख्याह्यनन्थाचरितोपपन्नम् परीक्षितम् भागवताभिरामम् तन्नः परम् पुण्यमसमृतार्थम् आख्यानमद्यद्भुतयोगनिष्ठम् आख्याह्यनन्थाचरितोपपन्नम् परीक्षितम् भागवताभिरामम् Samvrita artam,
as it is.
Akhyanam,
narration.
Ati,
very.
Adbhuta,
wonderful.
Yoganishtam,
compact in bhakti yoga.
Akhyahi,
describe.
Ananta,
the unlimited.
Acharita,
activities.
Upapannam,
full of.
Parikshitam,
spoken to Maharaj Parikshit.
Bhagavata,
of the pure devotees.
Abhiramam,
particularly very dear.
So Abhiram Thakur means who's very dear, because he was Shidam.
Translation. Thus please narrate to us the narrations of the unlimited, for they are purifying and supreme. They were spoken to Maharaj Parikshit, and they are very dear to the pure devotees, being full of bhakti yoga. Purport. What was spoken to Maharaj Parikshit and what is very dear to the pure devotees is Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is mainly full of the narrations of the activities of the Supreme Unlimited, and therefore it is the science of bhakti yoga, or the devotional service of the Lord. Thus it is para, or supreme, because although it is enriched with all knowledge and religion, it is specifically enriched with the devotional service of the Lord. So here the sages in Naimisharanya, they are wanting to hear about the transcendental pastimes. So this is significant, because they are sages. They are sitting in the forest. They study scripture. This is what they do. They sit, discuss, interact on this basis. But now they have heard everything, and they are wanting to establish themselves in hearing the transcendental subject matter. Right? So here Prabhupada points out that this is Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Means we always hear this, yes, Bhagavatam's the highest literature, and we're, you know, confident of that. But here Prabhupada's explaining why. Says it's, although it's enriched with all knowledge and religion, it is specifically enriched with the devotional service of the Lord. So enriched means it is full. Right, he's giving this term here, upapannam, full of, or there was that other one, yoganishtam, compact in bhakti yoga. This means it's compressed. In English you don't have a nice, you can say full. But full just means it's filled up. But here, yoga nishtam means they're fixed. It is more. It's pressed in. It's completely stuffed, you know, like that. So it's special in that way. Now, and so enriched means it has very important things in it, right? Because if something is enriched, you know, you put fertilizer in something, you enrich it. It's more, it's the essence, right? You enrich something with the essence. So just this term, Prabhupada's using enriched, means that the Bhagavatam is full of the essence of the material Vedic knowledge, or the knowledge in religion. And it is full of the essence of bhakti yoga. Right? So it makes it very special. You can also see is that how nicely Prabhupada uses these words. Because enriched, you enrich something means that you enrich it with some essence, right? You take milk, you don't enrich it with more milk or water. You put cream in it, you enrich it. You know, the ground, you enrich with fertilizer, which is essence. So enriching means it's full of the essence, right? Very unique use here. So the Bhagavatam then is para, in that it's the top, it's transcendental, there's nothing about it that's not. So even though it is full of also the material knowledge, right? The Vedic, you know, knowledge is there, and he says religion is there. You know, how someone does something in that. We see so many perfect examples of everything, how it should be done in the Bhagavatam. So the religion is all there. But bhakti being the main thing, then it's showing how that is connected to the Supreme. This is what makes the Bhagavatam unique. Right? The other Vedic literatures, they will describe their science, their knowledge. And generally they will connect it to religion, and a few verses will actually connect it to the Supreme. But unfortunately, most will not grasp that. It's just by volume. We're so used to looking at numbers rather than importance. You know, like that. So, even though there may be so many verses that describe how things can be done, right? One verse will say, but it should be done this way. Does that make sense? Like that. And then from that, there may be very rarely a verse that says, and in this way it connects to the Lord, or it can be used for transcendental subject matter. This is the way. So this is Vedic. Vedic, like let's say, example would be, you give, Manu gives 8 different kinds of marriages. So 4 of them are considered ideal, 4 of them considered less than ideal. The first 4 have the consent of the authority of the father of the girl. So in 3 of the, two of the good ones, the father chooses the boy, one by deliberate action, one by accident. I mean, just happens by providence. The third one, the girl chooses the boy because the father is not able to arrange, or it's a swayamvara. The fourth is the boy approaches the father. You know. The other ones then are Gandharva, mutual affection, Rakshasa, the girl is stolen, Asura, where the girl is bought by the boy, and the fourth is where the girl, when she is unaware of what's happening, is seduced. So these are 8 ways that someone could get married, right? So the Shastra is giving this because there's not a 9th, right? These are 8 ways in which a boy and a girl can be brought together. So it's pointing that out just so you understand what you're dealing with. Then it will go on to say that even though it tells rules that if, let's say, asura marriage, the girl is being, money is being given, that what are the rules of when the nuptial fee is given And then if the girl that is shown is not the one that ends up at the marriage, then the whole thing can be rescinded. And then if it was there, but then the girl died, then, you know, then because a contract has been made, he could marry the sister. So many things are there. After all said and done, then Manu says that the Asura right should never be used, because what father in his right mind would sell his daughter? Right? There are people who will do it, so therefore rules are given, but Manu says it'll never be, he should not be used. Right? Then it'll go on to say, and the paisach, you know, the goblin marriage, should not be used because the girl was not consenting. She didn't know what was going on. She's asleep, or she's disoriented, or, you know, something. Then, like that. So that is the lowest. So it's automatically thrown out. So that's two out of eight that are gone. Gandharva Rakshasa can be used, but not in Kali Yuga. So that leaves you the first four. Right? But, in people's mind, because it's been mentioned, then they will think, well, actually, you know, it's there, so Gandharva's not so bad. If it's a love marriage, it's not so bad. Even though it's been specifically stated, it can't be used in Kali Yuga. That makes sense. So, because it's been stated, people will think, well, maybe. Huh? Which one? What it just said? I'm saying is that because the Shastra has delineated it, then even though after giving a big explanation, it will in one verse say it shouldn't be used, the majority of the verses that explain that it is part of, it is one of the rites of marriage, and even if it explains the methodology of it, the tendency will be to ignore the one verse that writes it off rather than the verses, I mean, you will ignore that one and favor the majority of the verses. Does that make sense? Is that clear? Is that not? Another example would be animal sacrifice. That the animal, if it is a sacrifice according to Vedic rites, there is no sin. Right? In other words, you won't go to hell for it. But it doesn't mean that you won't become the animal in your next life and the animal won't become the sacrificer. Right? That's the meaning of monk-sa. Monk-saha means, mom means me, saha means you. Right? That's the contract. Me, you. This life it's me, next life it's you. You know, it's like that. It works. So, even though there's all those verses and very clearly making the point that the animal sacrifice is not sin, it's not bogus, then it goes on to say, but someone who, you know, because they're doing these for pious credits, right? So you're going to do one of the majors, the Ashwamedha, the horse sacrifice. So it says if in your lifetime, you know, in 100 years of your lifetime, you do 100 Ashwamedha yagyas, you would get the same benefit for being vegetarian for that 100 years. Right? That verse won't be noticed. Right? And it goes to point out, any intelligent man, if he really thinks about it, the origin of, you know, flesh is not very glorious. Right? It's pretty messy. Right? You have a nice little seed, pure little seed, and you stick it in nice clean dirt and you get a nice vegetable, right? But meat always comes from semen and ovum, you know, messy. Right? It's always considered impure. So that's the origin. So it points that out, but there's only about 3 or 4 verses that deal with that, and there's so many that deal with the other. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty in the Vedic literature, is even though they do point out the transcendental and they do point out the essence, the volume of technical information that is not essential and is not transcendental is the bulk. Right? So Vyasadeva tried to adjust that by the Mahabharata. In the Mahabharata, then, you get down to what is the essence of the religious principles, right? And showing what are the best methods of what's being performed. So in doing that, still, and he brings out more about the Supreme Lord, but still, because of volume, you still have the same problem. Right? So you're now down to more mundane essence, but the spiritual essence still hasn't become prominent. Therefore, then the Bhagavatam is written where it is only spiritual essence. And then from spiritual essence, it may refer back to material in its connection to the Supreme. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what makes the Bhagavatam unique. It's special in that way. So, religion simply means what is the nature of something. That's the most clear, clear definition. Any other definition needs to be in the context. But the inherent, unchangeable nature of something, that's religion. So, the unchangeable nature of the soul is that it's Satchitananda. It's eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. Therefore, bliss means interaction. Bliss means you don't have experienced bliss unless there is an activity with somebody that gives a result. Right? So you're with somebody, that's the sat. You perform an activity, that's chit. It gives a result, ananda. So that eternal platform can only be found with the soul with God, and the soul with other souls based on the platform of God. So unless God's involved, you will not actually understand or experience the eternal, actual nature of the soul. So that's religion. So the temporary religion is the conditioned nature. That conditioned nature also has a religion. You know, it's male, it's female, or it's a child, or it's an adult, or, you know, it's intellectual, or it's an artist, or one is celibate, or one is married. Each of those have also their eternal, unchangeable natures. But those natures aren't eternal for the soul. Does that make sense? In other words, the nature of a Brahmin, let's say a Grihastha Brahmin, is fixed eternally by Krishna. What it is. It was, it is, and it will be the same. That's fixed. So, but the soul is not fixed as a Brahmin Grihastha, right, of this world. No, that's temporary. But if they're in that stage of life, then they follow that religion. But not at the expense of their actual eternal religion, right? Always the higher takes priority over the lower. Right? And then that's the general, the generic, okay, Grihastha Brahmin. That's the generic, but now it is, you take the situation in the home. How the home works, that's also an eternal principle. Homes always work in the same way. You mix male and female, the principles are always the same. Therefore, now he's in the home. Or you take him out of the home and he's at the temple. So the temple, the performance of yajna or sacrifice or something else, that also has its inherent nature. Right? So then that will go. But that's done according to that he is a Brahmin and he's a Grihastha. Right? If he was a Brahmachari or he was something, then it would change. But within that sacrifice, then you're going to have many elements. He's doing Achman. It's an eternal principle. How you deal with the spoon and the cup and the water and the mantras and sipping and... Does that make some sense? You know, and then of that, you just have water. Right? Does that make sense? So each of these has its thing, so when you're dealing with it, you deal, but not at the expense of the higher. So the Bhagavatam is giving how the soul in his relationship with God will maintain that devotion and at the same time deal with one's conditioned nature, right? Specifically in the first 9 cantos. 10th canto, then that's purely transcendental. Right? And then the exacting science of the first nine cantos of engaging the conditioned nature is given in the 11th canto. You know, just like in the Gita, the first 11 chapters are describing the whole process of getting to the Supreme. 12th chapter is the Supreme. And then 13th to 18th is giving the science of how that worked. That makes sense? So that's just the way the Vedic literatures do. You get down the principles, the basic methodology, you know how it works, you know what the goal is, you know what the everything is. Then you can get down to more exacting science. That's also how you would teach. Right? You want to teach something, you first get across the principles that you're dealing with, your vocabulary. You get to the essence, is what you're actually trying to teach. Then once they've understood that, then you can go back and go through in finer detail how it goes. Right? So this is just how Vyasadeva, he's the most expert writer, right? So then he has written these study guides, you know, like Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam and all these things, how things work, like that. So this is there. Okay, so then, yeah. So he's pointing out the sages are, they want to hear the transcendental subject matter because it's perfect. It was spoken to Parikshit Maharaj. He attained perfection through it. Right? By hearing this, he attained perfection. And these topics are very dear to the great personalities, right? To the pure devotees. So from all these angles, and they're interested, right? It's transcendental, so that's nice. Parikshit Maharaj attained perfection. They want perfection, and it's dear to everyone. Any questions on this comment? Yes.
The word yoga nishtha has another meaning. Nishtha means not to move.
Not to
yoga
move.
Means devotional service. So that means Bhagavatam discards everything but doesn't move away from devotional service. Always connected.
Always fixed in devotional service, yeah.
So like when maybe it talks about different material things, but still connected, fully connected to Krishna.
Hmm. Yeah, very nice. Thank you. Did you hear? He was saying, is that another explanation of yoga nishtam? Yoga means bhakti yoga, or devotion, and nishtam means fixed, it doesn't move. So then another aspect is Bhagavatam is fixed in devotional service, it never adjusts from there. So even though it describes other topics, other Vedic topics or other worldly topics, it's always fixed in the devotion. Like that. Some other, yes.
Can you apply the same principle you mentioned to Vedic literature, that amongst many words only few are important? Can you apply that to Bhagavatam as well, that in amongst many words in Bhagavatam, few ones are essential ones?
Okay, can we apply in Bhagavatam that there are so many verses and some are essential? In the other Vedic literatures, then you have, what is the science? You know, either the definitions of the science means you have to create the field in which a body of knowledge is structured, right? So you have to have, what is the field? What are the elements of the field? What are the relationships between the elements? And then what are the purpose of the elements in combined together? Then you have to have how they're combined and what result you get, right? You have to have all that. So, therefore, in the material science, because these technicalities are more, result is the smaller part, though that's the what you're working for. But in explanation, it's the bulk will be your technicalities. Right? Therefore, in the Vedic literature, you can say these are essential. One, you could say they're essential on understanding the principles there, or understand the application, or understand the result, that's there. So you'll have that, you'll have the general verses, you have more essential verses that summarize things and explain things. Then you'll have the result. But we're talking about beyond that is actually his connection to the Lord. So when we're saying here, we're saying essential verses means those that connect it to the Lord, or those that are explaining exactly what things by doing will be able to be connected. In other words, they're indirect. In other words, it's indirect, but it's connecting it to the Lord. Like, let's say, there's so many rules on cleaning your house, right? How to clean. So they're very pious, these directions, but they're still mundane. But then some, so that some verse says, so in essence is cleaning is, let's say, is that you are to remove impure substances. Okay? So now we understand what is the purpose of cleaning. Right? On the technical point, skill point. But then it'll say, because if it is clean or it's pure, then it invokes a mode of goodness, right? The mind will be peaceful and therefore one will be satisfied, okay? So then you could say, okay, that's more essence, right? That actually explains what it is and the background behind it. That's the metaphysics of it, right? The one, it's explained the technical how to do it. The next level of higher than that is explaining what is the purpose behind it. Then behind that, higher than that's the metaphysics of it. But still, it's still mundane until it shows that because Krishna is the supreme pure, therefore for us in our conditioned state to be able to appreciate the supreme pure, we should also be pure. Right? Because if you want to associate with somebody, you have to have a common quality. Right? You have a friend, right? Why is there a friend? Because there's a common quality. You can't be a friend unless there's a common quality. You can't have a relationship unless there's a common quality. Right? Let's say we have a bowl, and we have a piece of, and we have a light switch. Can we have a relationship? No. But if we had a spoon, that we could have a relationship with a bowl. If we had a light bulb or an electric wire, that can have a relationship with the switch. Right? So the bowl and the spoon have the common that they can hold liquids or substance and move and, you know, support them, move them. While the light switch and the bulb and the wire, the common thing is electricity, is energy. Right? Then you can, so how will you be friends with the Lord if He is pure and you're not? Does that make sense? So that's the transcendental. Right? That one explains why the whole house or anything you do must be clean and pure. Okay? So Bhagavatam starts with that. So, but that's the supreme pure. Okay, so that's pure. That's still a secondary pavitra. That's still a secondary name of God. Right? So even though God's pure, He's great, He's omnipotent, omnipresent, these are all nice qualities, but that's not the higher form of rasa. That creates appreciation or reverence, but it doesn't create friendship or parental or conjugal. Right? So therefore, you have to approach the primary names for that. Nanda Nandana, Jashoda Nandana, Braja Nandana, Gopijana Bala, like this. Then you get to the higher stage. You know what I'm saying? So that means in the transcendental you have perfect, more perfect, most perfect. So there will be more essential because they are more perfect or most perfect. Does that make sense? So that's Bhagavatam, but in the Vedic literatures it's all come from God, so in that way then one can see it all as perfect. But what it's describing and to who, then that's people who are trying to become perfect. Does that make sense? So there is a slight difference. The principle is the same because the Vedic literature are the reflection of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Just like the material world is the reflection of the spiritual. Does that make sense? You have a city in the spiritual world, like Dwarka in the spiritual world. Right? That's reflected into the material world. So then there's a shastra on that reflection. It's called Vastu Shastra, or the Stapana Veda. It will explain what does a transcendental city look like. But because it's being given for the mundaners, generally the reference to transcendence is minimal, because what materialist is going to read to a literature that's all just transcendental, talking about God? He just wants to know which room, which corner of the house does he put his kitchen. You know, God, no God, that's not important to him. Does that make sense? But for the devotees, it's more important God, and then along with that, God likes his kitchen in this corner of the house. So, heck, hey, no problem. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the okay. So yes.
What is the religion of Sangha with Bhagavatam
as the center? Means it's the hearing and chanting. It's the same as any. Is that means? The introduction then mentions that, is that those who are interested, you know, in other words, interested persons in, interested persons with good character, then submissively hear and inquire from someone who is more knowledgeable than them in the pastimes of the Lord. Does that make sense? And their purpose is to taste the transcendental rasa and to understand their relationship with the Lord, right? And to remove any mundane concepts. So this is all given in the introduction. Right? It means the invocation of Bhagavatam, the first three verses, will explain this. Who it's for, what is the knowledge, what you'll get from the knowledge. Right? Any invocation will describe that. So Bhagavatams do. It's for those who are interested in transcendence. What you'll get is the taste of the transcendental. You'll know the Lord. Cheating religion, in other words, religion that's not connected to the Lord. This doesn't mean cheating where you're going against morality. No, they're throwing out morality also, in that if it's not connected to the Lord, it's immoral. That's the whole point. Right? Morality is morality, whether it's Krishna conscious or not. But un-Krishna conscious morality is still immoral, because the person you're actually trying to please is God. Does that make sense? It's a very difficult point where the two worlds overlap, because you're dealing with one is down, the other's up. You know, it's just like here the gopis dancing with Krishna are considered on the bottom, the spiritual world is up. So you, in the reflection, it's difficult. You know, like it would be very difficult to look at a reflection in the mirror and then ride a bicycle or something. You would have to do some serious practice to be able to do it. Right? But our ego, we think, hey, I can do it. And when you can't, there's something wrong with the mirror, the bicycle, or something else like that. So this is the difficulty, is that applying the Vedic knowledge, because we're not applying, if we're just applying it as gross materialists who want to, in a pious way, enjoy this world, it's very straightforward. Follow the rules of Varnashram Dharma very clearly. You will get wealth and sense gratification from it, guaranteed. Right? There's no ifs, ands, or buts. It's guaranteed. Right? But you want to use the Vedic system because you don't have something else. You only have the reflection. You don't have this. You don't have a spiritual body that you can function in the spiritual realm. When you get to Gokul, yes.
on the platform of Sudh City. But below that, you're in the conditioned nature in the material world. You're in the reflection. So now you're going to have to deal with the reflection, but you're going to have to try to use it on the spiritual platform. That's where the difficulty comes. But due to ego, then the we're never wrong, the Shastras are. Right? We misapply Varnashram. It's Varnashram's fault, not our fault. We misapply management. It's management's fault, not our fault. You know, we misapply, you know, anything, and it's always someone else's fault. That's the disease of the conditioned living entity. Right? So that's the difficulty. When you go to apply it, it's difficult. That's why Gita is there. It bewildered Arjuna, very qualified, very intelligent. He could not understand how it is I'm going to do my duty. I'm going to work for transcendence, not for the mundane. But that means I'm still going to go out there and fight. And the reason I'm out here fighting is for mundane purpose. I'm on this battlefield to establish justice, you know, because Duryodhana is wrong. That's why I'm here. Right? In doing that, and from doing that, I'm going to be happy. I've established justice, we've gotten rid of Duryodhana, now I will enjoy life. Right? Because that's the purpose of justice, right? It's to, is artha, is that you will gain and then you will enjoy. Right? That's the whole sole purpose of justice. Now, in doing that, then I figure out, okay, we're going to get rid of Duryodhana, but unfortunately we're going to get rid of the whole rest of the family. It's going to be, you know, him, his brothers, his wife, and his mother. And that's it. And there's going to be no one else. Okay, Dhritarashtra and Gandhari will also still be there. But that's it. There's not going to be one other person left. So that doesn't add up to enjoyment. So therefore, hey, okay, let them have it, and I'll go to the forest. Right? So then Krishna is saying, well, that's not going to work. You know, you have to be transcendental. You have to give up this ownership, this idea that you're the controller and doer and all this and that. And he says, yeah, great, yeah, I'm going to the forest. It seems to confirm he's going to fight. And Krishna says, no. You're supposed to go back on the battlefield and fight. And this thing is, hello, I'm on the battlefield for a mundane purpose, and you're saying transcendence is a real thing. You called me an idiot for being on the battlefield for mundane purpose. So, hey, I'm going to the forest. You know, I'm being transcendental. You know, I'm doing the transcendental thing, you know. And then Krishna's saying, no. You're going to be on the battlefield fighting, but now for me, and in knowledge rather than in ignorance. And remembering me rather than, you know, just, you know, Duryodhana is a, you know, a nerd. Well, actually, no, he's quite good. Yeah, he'd be a nerd. Does that make sense? So, right there, it bewilders Arjuna. That's why the Gita is there. Because with the knowledge of Gita, you approach Bhagavatam and the other Vedic literatures. That's the key. The Vedic literature's essence is the Upanishads. The Upanishads, the essence of that is Bhagavad Gita. Right? That's in a form we can understand. The other essence of the Upanishads is Vedanta Sutra, not so easy to understand. And the essence of that is Bhagavatam. Right? So these are the two. So the Chatur Shloki is the essence, and that's the Bhagavatam. Right? And the same principles in a simpler form are given in the Chatur Shloki in the Gita. Right? So this is, does that make some sense? So the most important thing then is the desire for transcendental knowledge with the idea to develop affection for Krishna. Right? And one is in a submissive mood, and willing to hear from those who know more than us. Right? It can be formalized here, it's one speaker, or it can be more general where there's many speakers, it can be more of a istagosti. Doesn't matter. Still, the concept is there are people who know more than me, and I'm willing to listen to them, and I will inquire submissively. That remains. That doesn't change. Is that okay? Who's qualified to speak? Basically, it's just every devotee who's practicing can speak. But if there's someone who's more senior or known as B is has more understanding, then generally that would be, they would be preferred for them to lead the discussion. But otherwise, anybody who except Krishna as God, that I'm the soul, and the process to go back to God is chanting Hare Krishna. You know, hearing and chanting about the Lord, then that right there makes them qualified. You can, if you want, that's an istagosti. You know, somebody generally leads it, but it's, many can comment and discuss in that. Yes, that's it. We probably do that the most, you see, let's say on, where you see it is, let's say on these reunions where they discuss about Prabhupada, so they'll talk and that'll, somebody else will say, oh, that reminds me of this past time, it'll move around. But generally it's moving within the circle of senior devotees, and others could ask questions like that. Yeah. Okay, last point, yes.
When
How do we understand we're following the temporary religion over the eternal? Means following the temporary is may or may not be giving us some good result on the material platform, but we're not necessarily becoming more God conscious. You know what I'm saying? Because there's the need for the soul to perfect things. That means knowledge. Chit potency means that you'll do it right. Exacting. Your sat also is that everything's perfectly done. The activity is perfectly done. And the result is perfect. So we're always endeavoring for that. But we always have to be careful to remember that perfection is actually if it's God conscious or not. That's the real thing. If you have the ability for perfecting something materially, you should. Otherwise, then it's not, you're not fully engaged. Does that make sense? In other words, you have the skill to do something very expertly. If you're not doing it expertly, you're not actually properly engaged. You're doing less than what you could. So the actual perfection is a Krishna conscious. That's the main thing. Then you look at it, but then one will say that the problem will come as people will be lazy. So then it's understood, Krishna saying that you do the work for me. So that means since the result's for Krishna, then that need to attain perfection is applied to the result for Krishna. Right? The general tendency is I'll work hard for myself. If what I'm working for is useless, I shouldn't be worried about it, I won't work for it. Right? But Krishna's point is, and that was Arjuna's situation, therefore he goes to the forest. But Krishna's saying, no, you're going to do the same thing, but you're going to do it for me. Therefore there's going to be all perfection in it, because you're doing it for me. So that balances between the two, because otherwise the material will be, it's got to be materially right, otherwise it's not good. And then you'll say, no, devotionally, it's the devotion that matters. But then if you say it's the devotion that matters, then someone may say, well, the skill doesn't matter, and so there'll be no endeavor to actually do something nice for Krishna. So therefore, it's the result is for Krishna, so you want the skill to be perfectly applied. Just as much or more as you would apply it if you were doing it for yourself, you should be doing it for Krishna. But now it's you're doing, your inspiration is that it pleases Krishna. This is the overlap that bewilders. Right? Because karma, you're working for the result, but knowledge is not important. In the path of knowledge, You know what and why things are done, so you're not interested in material endeavor because you don't have a material result. These two we can do perfectly. Right? The devotee can give up everything, not deal with anything material, not smile, not laugh, not do nothing that might be considered material, and have all knowledge and all that. Or go, this is all useless, I'm being realistic and be a gross materialist and just completely interested in the result. If you think about it, then generally that's what you see devotees do. Right? But to say, I'm going to do this, that's seemingly a mundane activity, and I'm going to do it right because the result I'm giving to Krishna, or it is Krishna's, that you don't see very often. Not to struggle with knowledge, that's what Krishna says with knowledge. You should know that you're doing it. Someone else engages you, you don't know in the beginning, that's fine, because you're going to get the result anyway, but with time you should know. You know why you're doing everything else, you should know that. You should know. That's why Krishna says, do the activity without attachment, with knowledge, remembering Him for Him. Right? Do the activity, that's karma, with knowledge and detachment, that's jnana. Remembering Me, that's jnana yoga. And for Me, that's bhakti yoga. So Krishna expects you're going to do all four yogas at once. And that's called bhuti yoga. Right?
So, because you're saying that with the temporary religion, that gives us the designation to the man. So, we're actually, even though we're within these boundaries, because of our detachment, it frees us from those designations.
Right.
Even though we're still welcome.
Yes, that's the whole, that's one, and that you're doing it for Krishna. In other words, we are working within the designation because it is our conditioned nature. We're not going to get away from it. Just like Krishna told Arjuna. If Arjuna is not going to get away from it, we're not. So Arjuna is a man, he's a kshatriya, he's a grihastha, he's going to the forest. Krishna laughs. He says, you'll still be a grihastha, kshatriya, living in the forest. Because as soon as you see any wrong, you're going to be out there trying to establish it. You'll be fighting with the demons. You know, you're just going to be fighting in this. And you're going to be doing it anyway. So if Arjuna can't get away with it, we won't get away with it. So then that means that, but the karma means that we're doing it for ourselves. Maybe in a pious way, for a higher purpose, but it's still for ourselves. But as soon as there's the knowledge, the detachment, the remembrance of Krishna, doing it for Krishna, it takes one out of that realm. Does that make sense? It means if there's knowledge and detachment, you're still within that still framework, but now it's on a higher platform. Just like the mother is taking care of the child in many instances for the child's benefit. They're not necessarily getting something back, right? Not in the immediate. So then, one could say that knowledge and detachment's there. You know what I'm saying? So it takes it to a higher level. But doing it to please Krishna and thinking of Krishna then takes it into transcendence. So that takes you out. So you have to go from the conditioned nature into the higher level of the conditioned nature, the metaphysical of it, and then go to the transcendental. But it's done simultaneously. By remembering Krishna, then you have inspiration why you should have knowledge and be detached, right? We become detached because of Krishna, right? We don't have natural detachment so much. Does that make sense? Previous ages, people were so pious and qualified, they were detached. Right? So they were already, they would go from being absorbed to detached. Then from that, they would go to the spiritual. For us, we're engrossed, we hear about the spiritual, that's nice, so to get that, you have to be detached. So we work from that way anyway, we're coming down from there. Does that make sense? So for us, that's why if we don't remember Krishna, it's not necessarily even our skillful and, you know, intelligent and detached work actually is. Because very few come from backgrounds that have that kind of character and quality. Some do. It's still alive, but it's very rare. Does that make some sense? Okay, so we'll end here, and then if there's any further questions, we can continue after. Kunta Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Srimad Prabhupada Ki, Samadhita Bhaktivinoda Ki, Vachanya Taito, Vachanya Taito. Something Prabhupada wrote in the previous purport. Yeah. Comment on how Sukadeva, how Pariksit Maharaj became an Uttamadhikari because Pariksit Maharaj, excuse me, how Pariksit Maharaj became an Uttamadhikari because Sukadeva Goswami was an Uttamadhikari and initiated him. So the question's on. Explain the concept means by initiation then you're connected and its purpose is to elevate. So then in this here then initiation means siksha, right? For Uttamadhikaris then initiation is on the siksha platform. They don't have to use pancharatrik diksha to enact initiation. Does that make sense? Other examples, Haridas Thakur and the six Goswamis, they're all disciples of Lord Chaitanya, but you never hear of any pancharatrik initiation. Does that make sense? Or even Vedic, right? Sukadeva didn't even bother with the Vedic. You know, just ran off down the road, and his father saying, well, at least take Upanayana. You know, but he was already, by being an Uttamadhikari, you're already a Brahmin. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. You know, something like that. Is that the Pancharatra is giving the transcendental instruction, but also along with a regulated lifestyle and system of worship that will keep one out of sinful life. Right? That's what the Pancharatra... Because the Pancharatra is actually just formulated Bhagavat for the purpose of addressing the needs of the conditioned soul. Does that make sense? While Vedic is actually dealing with the mundane needs of the living entity, but in such a way that they're progressive and they will lead one to the Lord. Does that make sense? So there is a slight difference. It's the same principle. The same principle is there. In the Vedic literature, there's nothing on Bhagavat, Pancharatrika, or Vedic that is inconsistent like that. But some of the along with means the principles are never inconsistent. Details will be. It means that the spiritual principle is there in the spiritual world. It reflects into the material world. The Pancharatra connects it to the deity. So it actually puts it on the spiritual platform. So you're in the spiritual world by being with the deity. Does that make some sense? And it addresses the conditioned needs as far as, you know, basic eating, sleeping goes. You know, you have to dress, you have to take a bath, you have to, these kind of things. It doesn't get into mating and defending. Right? So then it deals with it there. So it's just taking those, basically, would be Vedic, the elements of the Vedic, the reflection of the Vedic that are actually directly connected to the Lord. All those are taken out of the Vedic literature, that's Pancharatra. Right? So Pancharatra is the essence of the Vedic literature, like what's connected to the Supreme. Now the Vedic, those same principles are there. Right? All the principles of the Bhagavad means the Pancharatra is just the Vedic, but it took it from the reflection. Because we can relate to the reflection. So they're still the same principles, the Bhagavad principles. They're also the same principles of the Vedic. So whether any of those three platforms are consistent, and you can move easily from one to the other without any difficulty. But there are details surrounding each principle which on the Bhagavata and Pancharatra don't really have much of a problem. The difficulty comes in the from the Bhagavata to the Pancharatra that you get the aspect of Vaidhi, the rules. So even that can be accommodated in Vaikuntha. But for Braj, then the spontaneity needs to take precedent over the rule. The rule is still followed, but it's done to please Krishna rather than it's the rule. Does that make sense? Like that. The rule is not the basis of interaction. The rule assists the spontaneous basis of action. Does that make sense? It means you have to have some way to interact. So there must be some form. But the form gives expression to the natural mood of the Brajavasis. The form is the natural expression for the Vaikunthavasis. Does that make sense? Does that make some sense? Did you catch it? It just reverses it. The expression of the love has to be expressed through something. So it's expressed through the form of the rasa. Does that make sense?
That means that the Vajrasa is making so many nice things for Krishna. Nice food, nice decoration, but it's not the decoration of Krishna enjoys.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not so much the sweet taste of the food, it's the
no.
Sweet desire of consciousness.
Yeah, that's the secret of Braj, is that it is the source of the form, but the form is simply to support the mood.
But still, food,
but still, that's why the affection is there, is that we'll do this and that. Because Krishna's established those. You have to have some grounding, meaning the principle of Sankarshan means Balaram has to establish something that you can choose from. Otherwise, how do you have intelligence? How does mind work? Intelligence discriminates between options. Mind chooses, accepts, and rejects options. So, therefore, the transcendental mind and intelligence, and also you have to have different things, so you have ego, identity. It means I have affection for Krishna as a parent. So that is an identity. So that creates the form of the parents. Does that make sense? And then they want to serve in so many different ways. So then I could serve him in this way. I could cook for him, I could feed him, I could bathe him, I could dress him, I could make ornaments for him, I could make a house, I can protect him, I can be. So these are options. So then the mind accepts and rejects, and then within that, then the thing. So Balaram then has established that. You know, that's your yoga maya. Your the internal, the potency, the field, the sat establishes that field. Then the chit is your intelligence and options within that. And your ananda is the results you get from operating it. So there has to be a field, but that's why yoga maya covers it. Because it should not get in the way of the spontaneous affection. Because they have that spontaneous affection they want to, then these are ways that are able to express it. But in Dwarka, then they want to serve Krishna, but the rule itself becomes more prominent than the spontaneity. It reverses because the
rule.
Yeah, to please Krishna. Yeah.
What between Balaram and the creation of the spiritualist management and Sandit in Yogamaya, having said that Balaram manifests the spiritual world and Yogamaya orchestrates the activities?
Yeah, yeah. It means it's always is that the situation is the masculine principle and the operation of it is the feminine principle. It's always. Everything ultimately, Vishnu Purana, that's explained by, I think, Gotama. Ultimately, everything boils down to male and female, because everything is ultimately Krishna and his energies. So everything works like that. Is Balaram's the field, or in this case, he'll be Sadashiv. He's the field. And then Yogamaya is operating that field, right? Just like the man creates the facility, the house, the facilities, the money, the furniture, all that. Operating that's done by the wife. So these are eternal principles that don't change. That's why if you know the spiritual, you can know the material. Or you can look at the material based on the spiritual principles and understand and get there. Does that make sense? Like that, because they don't change. The male-female principle doesn't change whether it's on the transcendental platform or on the pious platform or on the impact. Just like rasa, the principle of it, whether it's transcendental, emotional, or sensual, doesn't change. The elements it's dealing with changes, but the principle doesn't. Still ashray vishay, male-female, still works. The male's the enjoyer, the female's the enjoyed. The female draws from the male. Right? Because that's the thing. The female wants this, that draws from the male the facility. Draws from the situation. The woman's very happy and all this and that draws happiness from the man. Right? It's not that the man is thinking, I'll go in and set the mood. No, the woman sets the mood. Because the woman, the female, always draws from the male. It's just eternal principle of how rasa works, ashray vishay. That's why many times people get frustrated. They think, I'm going to establish it. No, you go on the thing. Just like the mother is there, it works on the kid. In this case, the mother would be the male principle, the child would be the female principle. Because they're the authority, they're creating the environment, the kid's moving within that. The kid wants to eat, so that draws that from the mother. The kid wants to sleep, draws that. Wants to play, wants to this. Wants to... Does that make sense? So it's a very... The whole creation... Work, cosmic creation works on these principles. So that's why for the pure devotees, it's seamless for them between the spiritual and material. Right? Means they look at the material, to them it's just Krishna's creation. And everything here they can relate to there. They don't make any distinctions in that way. They don't make any material distinctions. They can distinguish in quality of energy and its use in Krishna's service and stuff like that, but it's different. But because the conditioned soul can't tell the difference between spiritual and material, therefore we make that very clear distinction. And, you know, what is good for liberation, what will bind you in the world and all this. But, so we take it that the activity itself is the thing, but actually it is the consciousness. Does that make sense? The consciousness is what's important. It means you wash the dishes, but if the consciousness is you're doing for Krishna, that gets you out of the material world. If you're doing it because I wash the dishes at Govinda's restaurant because I get paid, then you don't get out of the material world. Right? If in doing that you made a little endeavor and did a little bit beyond what you needed to do, that was devotion, and that will take you. But otherwise, you're washing the dishes just because you're getting paid. You know, you could be washing dishes somewhere else and getting paid. But it's nicer at Govinda's because, you know, it's devotees and it's vegetarian and all that. And, you know, and the other vegetarian restaurants, they are a little freaky, but they're better than the non-veg restaurants. But still, you know what I'm saying? Like that. The person who's arranged that you wash the pots because they're Krishna's dishes, he's getting the benefit of the devotional service. But now, if you're doing this because it's Krishna's pots and I want to wash Krishna's pots, but because, you know, I'm in, you know, whatever situation, a family person or this or that, I need money, so therefore, you know, they're reciprocating your service with giving you something so that you can take care of your family, then it's still service. Because your focus is on washing the pots nicely for Krishna. And then they're paying you. That's another consideration. So just the change, the consciousness changes the whole thing. You know, so that's why the focus is on Baba mentioned, change the consciousness. You don't have to change anything else because automatically everything else will adjust anyway with time. You change the consciousness and you've actually gotten the essence. Well, you change the activity, it's not necessarily. Right? Does that make any sense? So that also then makes the differences in the realms. You know, between Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwarka, Vaikuntha, you know, the heavenly planets, you know, like this, is because the consciousness just keeps adjusting. And so you get different realms because of that. But otherwise, Krishna is still the same person. But because the devotees, the ashray, only draw from him only a portion of his personality, therefore he only manifests that much of his personality, then we'll say Vishnu is different than Krishna, but actually it's the same person. It's just that the devotees of Vaikuntha only invoke from Krishna just the element of awe and reverence, but he also has the other aspects of conjugal, parental, and friendship, but they don't invoke it, so therefore he doesn't manifest that. So that's why when for the devotees, they just see Krishna. The gopis, when they're talking with Krishna and they're displeased with him, they don't make any distinction between the avatars. They say, see, you don't know how to, you know, we've given up everything, we've come out to this forest in the dark of night, you know, and this is really, you know, I mean, you look at it, what woman does that? Right? Woman's not going to leave her house, right? It's comfortable. She's not going to go out in the forest. It's not comfortable out there. Let alone at night. Let alone in the middle of the night. Very dangerous. Right? Women aren't about to give up gain and safety. Right? You're going to have to love somebody a lot to do that. And at the same time, is in doing that, they have no place to go back to. Okay, woman may do something, but she can always fall back on her what she already previously had. Right? Here is not only she doing something against the feminine nature, but it's, or let's say the natural feminine nature, but it also is completely eradicating all the facility in that the women need. They have to have gain and safety. That is women. They're giving it all up. So then they're saying, we've done all this for you. That means we love you so much. Otherwise, why would we be here? Right? Woman doesn't do anything without some purpose. So if out of their affection they've done that, so then you're here. So you're not reciprocating. So we know you're like this, you deal with other women like this. You know, you cut off Suparnika's nose, you did this, you did that, you know, you don't deal nicely with women. So they're not distinguishing between the avatars. They just see it as Krishna. So that's the principle there. But therefore they can't. That means the other devotees don't see. You know, but the Vrajavasis do. You know, like that thing where the Krishna took the form of Narayan, he was hiding, and the gopis were going, where's Krishna and this and that, and you know, he's a form. You know, he's got his all arms and like that. And the Radharani came, and then it's kind of like he's in the mood because she's ashray of his complete form. She's Sarup Shakti, so she's the complete energy. That means she has an element of ashray for every aspect of his masculinity. So as soon as she's there, then he can't hold it. Because Vaikunthapati is part of it because she's Lakshmi. So he can hold it on that, but at the same time as she is Radharani, so then it'll go out, and it'll go in, and it'll go out, and it'll go in, and it'll go out. So it's just, you know, so it depends upon the ashray. Just like another example for us would be the deities that are installed here are Radha and Krishna. But because we don't have that braja praying, we deal with them through the form of the pancharatra, which is rules and regulations. So they actually reciprocate, even though it's Radha Krishna, they deal with us as Lakshmi Narayan. They're not Lakshmi Narayan, but because we address them as that, they reciprocate that. That's the form. Though we're offering prayers and kirtan, we're doing everything for Radha and Krishna, but still our mood is still not that of braj. So to that degree it is, to that degree they reciprocate. Does that make sense? Yeah. Something like that. So that's the whole thing is just, that's ultimately the secret to the whole thing is that it's simply that mood. But because moods we don't see necessarily, we get caught up in the mundane, so therefore we take it to the external, something visible and tangible and observable. You know, these forms, these rules, these regulations, you know, you chant 16 rounds, follow four of the principles, do all these different things. It's something we can see and tangibly do. Then with time we start to, I'm doing this for Krishna. But ultimately then it's just, you know, it pleases Krishna, that's why I'm doing it. In the beginning, we're doing it because it will get us out of the material world and get us to the spiritual world. Then it's like, oh, it will get us Krishna. But then ultimately it's that it pleases Krishna, therefore I'm doing it. It comes back down from Krishna. So this coming down is actually the higher principle. And this is the amazing thing, is that in Lord Chaitanya's mission, it's given in that form. So even though the residents of Kali Yuga are the lowest and most unqualified, the method that they have for using the devotional method is actually a higher principle. It's actually a Madhyama principle. You know, like that, or even the Uttama principle. Even though the consciousness is not on that platform. Because in others, then they have, they're on this and they follow the rules and this and they elevate themselves up. We're only doing it because it's connected to Krishna. Like that. So it's very imperceivably the braja mood is, you know, infused in the Sankirtan mission. You know, despite what others may think of us, or, you know, the Gaudiyas or this or that will say that we're all Vaidhi, but I would disagree. You know, our consciousness may be Vaidhi, but our method is not Vaidhi at all. Not at all. So it's a very, it becomes very kind of mystical and almost bewildering, these things, because the overlaps and where they switch are so subtle. The one thinks one's doing one thing and it's another. Does that make sense? You know, like, let us say, I've mentioned this before, I don't know if you were here, we, just like we're accused that we're Vaidhi and some of the Gaudiyas are Rag. Yeah, it's in the Rag. So then the thing is we'll be said Vaidhi, but the thing is we worry the least about rules. You know, they're more into the rules. We're doing it because it pleases Krishna, pleases Prabhupada, because we don't really know the rules so much. The others say, no, you have to follow the Raga Nuga Sadhana because that's the method. There's no other way. Just that definition is Vaidhi. If you should do something because the scriptures say, that's Vaidhi. That's the definition of Vaidhi Bhakti, is doing the activity because the scriptures say it should be done. That's Vaidhi. Rag means following the scriptures because you like it. That's Prabhupada's definition. That's the one he uses. That's what Rupa Goswami uses. Somehow or another, the so-called Raganugas don't use that one. They say you have to be following this form of reading about gopis and Brajalila and all this. That's Raganuga. But that's Vaidhi. It may be a very refined level of Vaidhi Bhakti, but it's still Vaidhi. You know, because if you tell them, you know, you're not doing wrong. No, going to Prabhupada's example, going to Mangalarti because you need to, it's Brahma Muhurta, it's purifying and it's elevating and you should be engaged in spiritual activities, that's Vaidhi. Going to Mangalarti because you like going to Mangalarti, that's Rag. That's how it works. The residents of Vrindavan serve Krishna because they like him. They couldn't care less if he's God. He can be God. Okay, then what he does in his spare time, what do we care? Right? And that was like, you know, but they love Krishna. You know, Mother Yashoda is not bathing Krishna because, you know, it's the rule you have to take. She just likes to bathe Krishna. And it happens to be the perfect time of day to perform that activity. Right? Because some form has to be created. As we mentioned before, there has to be some form, you know, when you take the bath. Otherwise, when you take the bath. Because otherwise you just take bath all day. But there's so many elements of interaction that Krishna likes. So they all have to fit in. So Krishna's therefore made, these are the times for eating, these are the times for bathing, these are the times for sleeping, these are the times for entertainment. Like in the morning, you don't get up and go and watch a drama. No, after dinner you watch a drama. Right? So entertainment's in the evening. You know, playing is, you know, after 10, you know, after the morning. You know, occupation is after the morning. So Krishna's already set what goes where you can get the most taste out of. And that matches. Everything's consistent because it's him. So therefore, the time of the day, the activity, the raga that goes with it, the mood that's there, the persons involved. Like, you want to play, you know, then, you know, for boys, serious play, you do it with boys. Right? You don't do it with your mother, you don't do it with your father, you don't do it with the girls. It's with the boys. So therefore, then, that full manifestation of playing is done with the cowherd boys, and after the morning time. You know, so there's that time that's in there. But as soon as it goes, because you're still dealing in goodness, and goodness means vata, and vata means action, so that means it's good, because they run around, jump, this, that, so it should be under vata. But then around 10:30 to like 3:30, it goes into pitta. Right? So that's the right time for passion. So then it goes off of the gopis. Right? And then in the evening again, then it goes into kapha. Then you come back, you know, you're winding up your activities, you're coming back, preparing for the evening, you know, like these kind of things, more relaxed. Like that. Does that make some sense? You know, so everything's consistent. The Ayurveda, the astrological things, the seasons, the everything, it's all perfectly matched to create the perfect taste. You know, to get the full, whatever's the maximum taste you could get from that particular activity, then it works at that time. You know, so everything works very, very nice. You know, it's just, it's so perfect. Krishna is so perfect that his creation is just like him. You know, and it works in the same principles because it is him. How Krishna functions is how the creation functions, is it's him. And how we function is the same also, because we're also expanded from him. So there's, in that way then, if one gleans the principles of the Vedic knowledge and the transcendental knowledge, then there's no difficulties in moving between. One can engage, like Prabhupada could, you know, deal with money and things and this and that. You know, like the devotees were bewildered when that, you know, how is it, you know, was it land shark or something like that took money from them and stuff, you know, very early days. Prabhupada was not present. And he said, okay. And when he came back and immediately called the guy up and went to the guy and said, okay, hey, we want our money back. And the guy just gave it back because he knew Prabhupada meant business. You know, or probably be walking down I think it happened on two occasions. So once at the beach, and I think once they were walking on the sidewalk. And the dog came up behind him growling, this and that. You know, these kind of Western, you know, Lord of the Universe dogs, you know. And Prabhupada was just walking and ignoring it. And when it got really close, and they turned around and kind of like, you know, drop down to a squatting position, whacked his stick on the ground, made a face and went hut all at once. And the dog freaked and ran off, you know. So then, you know, so then later on, then the devotee got confident and tried doing it and just made the dog more angry, right? More angry. And so then Prabhupada had to, you know, show again. So Prabhupada could, and these things and dealing with the material energy, Prabhupada said no one can give him any trouble because he's a Calcutta boy. You know, Calcutta is just so cosmopolitan and so everything like that that there's nothing happening in anywhere else in the world that's not going on in Calcutta. You know, it's like that, oh, New York, well, they got the mafia, they got a big mafia in Calcutta, you know, and just everything's going on there. There's nothing that's not happening in Calcutta. So if you can function in Calcutta, then you can function anywhere. So that means he was comfortable dealing, but he still sees everything in connection to Krishna. Principles that it works, because the Niti Shastra still works on anybody. It works on in India, it works on a pious person, it works on an impious person, it works on India, it works on a Western, it works on an Asian, it works anywhere. The whole thing is still little art and application, but it still works. The principles of the Vedic literature still work because they're Krishna. Krishna gave the creation, and the literatures explain how he functions in the creation. Krishna is the universal form, so everything that's going on is him. So he writes the scriptures saying how he's performing his pastimes. But it's written in such a way that we don't see it like that. Because most people don't want to see it like that. They don't want to... It's like the boy wants to think, I am the man. And he thinks, I am enjoying with the girl. And the girl thinks, I am the girl. They don't want to think that the male principle is that of the universal form. It is empowering this particular form that this soul is in that we call the boy, and his female potency is empowering the form that's the girl with the female potency. And then those two compatible potencies are interacting because that's what they're doing anyway. The potencies are already interacting, but here, through this material form, they're interacting. It kind of like takes the mystique and the romance out of the interaction. Therefore, people don't want to know that that's what's going on. Therefore, karma removes the knowledge. Right? And then jnana, you know that, so therefore you don't engage in the activity. Right? But the devotion is that there's an attachment for that interaction, therefore one gets married, but one knows what's going on, but one is doing all the duties for Krishna. Because this is how his masculine potency is going to deal with his feminine potency. And they're formalized in the form of these duties of the man and formalized in these duties of the woman. And so the man and his duties, the woman, they interact, and therefore they taste the emotions that are actually just being empowered from the universal form. Like that. But, you know, that will get you out. You'll get liberation from that. So even though you're performing your grihastha duties, you'll get out of here. It won't give you bhakti, but it'll free you from the material world. But if you're doing it to please Krishna, then that will then mature into bhakti. Like that. Does that make some sense? So it's very subtle. So that's why it's not written in that way, because for most people it's too much. The metaphysics are too freaky. And it takes all the fun out of it. You know, like that. You know, it's just like, okay, take a really good one. Like you take, Bhagavatam Prabhupada mentions one place where the chest of the woman is attractive because it's empowered with the two potencies of I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. That's the two reasons that the living entity is in the material world. Right? I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. I and mine. So one's I, one's mine. So the man is naturally attracted to it because that's his identity. The masculine identity is I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. So the woman's chest is empowered with those two potencies. Therefore the man's attracted to him, not the woman. Right? But that comes into there, then it kind of like takes some of the, it takes the whole fun out. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like something's removed from there, you know, like that. And if you think about, okay, you're dealing with, you know, Madhvacharya says fat and muscle and blood. You know, that's all. So the only thing that makes it special is because of the empowerment. But in the spiritual world, then it's different, because there means the I element means is attraction, and the mind element is attachment. So in the spiritual world, then because the nature of the attraction and attachment is so great in the gopis and in the parental rasa, therefore it manifests there. One of them then is the manifestation of their attraction to Krishna. One is the manifestation of their attachment to Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is attracted to them, because their attraction to him. But that reflects here, and then we think it's our control and our enjoy. But there, it's Krishna's attraction, because it's their manifestation of their affection. Therefore, then those interactions. Does that make sense? So that's great for breaking down the material world. Okay. We're going to end anyway. Okay. You know what I'm saying? So the metaphysics of it are great for breaking things down and connecting things to Krishna. But they take the romance out of material endeavor like that. Does that make any sense? Yes.
How can we do something
to please Krishna? How can we what?
How can we do something in order to please Krishna? How can we do something to
please Krishna?
If you don't really have love for Krishna.
How do we do something to please Krishna if we don't have love for Krishna? Because we're doing it for the purpose of developing that love for Krishna. We're doing it under the authority of Krishna and of Krishna's devotees. So therefore we're doing it to please his devotees. And if you please his devotees, that's the actual way to get Krishna. To please Krishna is one thing, but actually that's the generic. The real technical point is pleasing the devotees. That's how you please Krishna.
There's one term mentioned here in the Bible, it's called Aropya, or description. Example given. Somebody, what he looks at, deities, material objects, but he tries to think they are transcendental, they are God.
Yeah.
It's kind of trying to think,
terrible
pretending.
Point of pretending, as we mentioned, your body's dead matter. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, but you're pretending that it's male. You're pretending that you're an adult. You're pretending that you're a brahmachari. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing here that's real. That's the first illusion. We really take it seriously that it's here, it's real. I would say this could be one of the major faults that the devotees are coming across nowadays. They actually take themselves seriously. They really think, you know, we're grihasthas, we're managers, we're like that. It's causing a lot of problems. It's all an illusion, but because we're all in the illusion, we play the part. Just like a drama is an illusion, but everybody has roles, and we do it right, everybody enjoys it, the actors, the audience, everything. So the idea that if it's an illusion, I don't play the part, that's impersonalism. Because a drama, we play the part. Everybody knows it's an illusion. In fact, people pay money to watch the illusion. Right? And people rehearse for months to present that illusion. But it still doesn't mean that it's not done. So that's the thing. Just because it's illusion doesn't mean we don't do it. Does that make sense? So, aropya then means we project onto it our own values. But still we connect it to Krishna. And by doing that, it's purified, and then gradually it comes through. So Aropya is not a problem. It's a lower level, but the point is it doesn't matter. That's where you start. We start there. Does that make sense? We're starting with Aropya. It's not a problem. Someone will try to make it that it's a problem. And, oh, ISKCON's engaged in Aropya Bhakti. Yeah, let's say, but is anybody else, have they even started? You know, the point is the neophyte uses Aropya Bhakti. He doesn't have another alternative.
What's the one definition for Aropya? Aropya one-eyed?
Would be... Aropya means projecting your own values on it, or your own vision on it. So Aropya Bhakti means your own vision, but then connecting to Krishna. It's just like Aropya would be, I like pasta, therefore I connect it to Krishna. So that's Aropya Bhakti. While, let's say, Vaidhi Bhakti is, okay, according to the Shastra, I should offer rice, dal, and sabji to Krishna. Right? But the higher principle would be Krishna likes rice and dal and that, so I offer that to him. But at the same time, as you know, as a guest in your house, is what is important to you, then that's interesting. So therefore, because you like it so much, you're going to spend so much time endeavoring to make it and everything, and to you it's a nice thing, so you're going to offer with more enthusiasm and all that, so therefore it's not bad. But if you ask him, hey, he likes the rice and dal. You know, like that. So that's the kind of... So Aropya just means you like it, therefore, you know, like that.
In the knowledge of drama, everybody plays some other identity. So how can the word of the Lord fit in this drama?
Oh, how does a pure devotee fit into the material drama? Because he doesn't see, it's still the material world, still his Krishna's energies. It's still the same thing. A man in the spiritual world still has the same duties to a family as a man here. Nanda Baba still, you know, creates the facility and the protection and everything like that, and talks sweetly to the mother Jashoda, and so if they're here, they'll do the same thing. The culture here is simply a reflection of there. That's one thing. The other thing is that whether it's the elements that you're using means it's like this. The pastime means it's yoga maya, right? There has to be some yoga maya. If there's not some, even in Vaikuntha, there has to be some yoga maya. Otherwise, if God's so great and this and that, you can't do anything. So there has to be an idea that even though I'm insignificant, I can still do something that will please God. So there has to be that much yoga maya. Does that make sense? So just in Vrindavan, it just covers that it doesn't matter if he's God or not. You know? It's not that they... You know, it's like that he can't be God. It's like he could be God, but who cares? You know, that's not why they like him. They like him as a person. Right? Just like any, you know, established... wealthy or powerful person, this is one of their main anxieties of life. Do people deal with me nicely or like me because of my position or because of me as a person? Right? And those that like them as a person are the most close, you know, associates. And those that do everything perfectly because they're in the position they are, then they're respected for that in relationship to their position. They're the most confidential in that. But as far as personally, it's the one who couldn't care less if they're big or small. Right? The guy was small, he becomes big, his friend still deals with him in the same way. He likes that. Or he's big, something happens, he becomes small, he still deals with him the same way. That's a friend. So therefore the Brajavasis are so special. Because he can be God, he can be not be God, it doesn't matter. They just like him because they like him as a person. They just like his qualities.
That's why that's why they interact, they serve him, they do everything, because of his qualities. Does that make sense? So it's a drama anyway. It's Yoga Maya. So those devotees are under Yoga Maya here. So therefore for them it's the same drama. You know, just that you have, unfortunately, a lot of bad actors, you know, like that. Well, in the spiritual world, everybody's a good actor. Here, some are good, some are pretty bad. Dantavakra, you know, Duryodhana, you know, they leave something to be desired. They're doing a bad job.
Then, if you consider that the Uttama Vikari, who deals with other people, where the roles in this, so he has to be set to the level of Uttama Vikari.
Yeah, he takes the form of the Manya, but it doesn't mean his consciousness becomes a Manya. Right? He takes the form of the Manya, where he distinguishes. The Uttama doesn't distinguish. Does that make sense? Do we have an eternal connection? And preferences for other souls. At this point, I really wouldn't worry about that. You know? It wouldn't be, you know, it's not really important. You know what I'm saying? It means our preference for souls, yeah, Rupa Goswami, you know, previous acharyas, you know, the residents of Vrindavan, like that. Yes? I think there's a place, I'm not sure, but I've seen it, where Jiva Goswami takes the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, which is basically one would take it as God as the Supreme and like that. He breaks it down by syllables and explains Krishna's whole manifest lila through it, his birth, his going, you know, going from the jail, going to Braja, this, that, coming back to Dwarka, everything. He takes it syllable by syllable, and they're in order, and explains it that way. So there's the direct meaning, the indirect, and the hidden meaning. Like that. So then, all these things, so each one is there. One's may, their direct meaning may be more obvious to us that it's more essential, but it's not necessarily that's for us, but otherwise everything that's connected to Krishna is perfect. You know, that's the special. Or you could take it as that the first six cantos, then that's perfect. But then the second six cantos is more perfect. And then the second six cantos, then your tenth canto will be the most perfect. That's the thing, it's all nice. It's all relationship. Just like when you see that they're describing all the different the cosmic creation is still kind of personal. The different personalities on the planets and what are their values and who they worship and stuff like that and, you know, what's going on in relationship to people and stuff. So it's not just dry science like that. Well, you know, your astrological works will be more just the dry science. You know, they'll give some indication, but still, it's rare. You know, if they're problem, then they'll tell that, you know, Mars is actually controlled by Nrisimha. So then you know the connection. But
But other than that, it won't give the connection. The rest you have to just remember. But the Bhagavatam will be giving that whole, like that. So it's even though it's the same things, it's much more appreciated. Like that. No, it's the perfect every that's a pibita bhagavatam rasamala. It's just everything is just nectar. Every syllable is nectar. That's the Tattva Sandarbha, I think, establishes that point. Like that. Is that okay? Yeah, okay. Yes, Martin.
In cultivating the knowledge of Sri Vairam, is it more conducive to a
both. You have to know what's the difference between the two to be able to tell what is the twilight. Otherwise, how do you know what twilight is unless you know what day and night is? That's why vidyam cha. You simultaneously study what is knowledge and what is ignorance. Because the knowledge is what is progressive, the ignorance is what's regressive. And so then the twilight, you have to be able to distinguish what's there in both. Does that make sense? Okay, last point. Yeah.
You mentioned that the condition for the deceased condition is practicing Vata Shamadana or Spirit Shamadana, then unless the word is accused, it's the wrong process. So I was wondering, is there any medic system of dealing with the disease?
How to deal with the disease? One is hearing from authorities, so we have the right knowledge. Two is because it's from the acharyas and all that, the right source, therefore our particular perspective is correct. Then three is practicing, contemplating it so that we see it in relationship to our situation and try to make that our situation matches with what we've heard. And then we have to practice that. And with a lot of practice, then we'll start to get understanding and realization. So without practice, it won't happen. It's not a matter of mental hospital. It's a matter of the whole Vedic culture is a mental hospital, because everyone in the material world is crazy. You know, that's the principle. So it's a matter of you have an identity and you have duties. By having an identity and duties, it makes it work. Because then you know what it is you have to perfect. Otherwise, you can't perfect everything. So you work on, you have your world, you work on that. Then with practice, you'll get it to work. But you still have to know what's the essence, what it's for, why it's there. That's the need of knowing the transcendental. Like that. So then you engage in those activities and you try to get them right. You know? But the point is, it's also, the Vedas say that the Brahman should not berate himself for past mistake. He should not always be hammering himself over the head for having made a mistake. No, you made the mistake. Okay, now let's move on. What's wrong? Let's not do that again, and let's try to do it right next time. Because you have to continue the practice. Without the practice, you won't get perfect. Without activity, there is no perfection. Some activity has to be there. So activity should never stop. Just because you've done it wrong doesn't mean it shouldn't continue. Just next time, do it less wrong. Better do it right, but at least do it less wrong than last time. Or at least be aware that you're doing it wrong so that you can make a step to make it so that you don't do it wrong the next time. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it should be awareness and then move forward. So that's the thing. So that means then there has to be, you already have what is your proper conditioned ego and your transcendental ego. So therefore you don't have to worry about false ego. False ego generally stops one from continuing because you don't want to be wrong. You know what I'm saying?
like that. So it's just a matter of redoing. You know, doing it again and again and again, practicing. Does that make sense? Okay. So we'll end here. Sorry. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Chinese I go to play with Andy.